Okay, everybody, welcome to the show. Neil, how's it going this week, man? Calling in from lovely Wisconsin.
We've been watching A Gentleman in Moscow, which Sam, you'll appreciate because got Ewan McGregor and your mutual bae, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, aka Ramona Flowers.
Yeah, I hate that I find her so hot, but I'd be lying if I didn't say that she was. Listen, I'm just out here speaking the truth.
Look, you'll see her in a lot of backless dresses, if that's your thing.
Oh God, Neil. Listen, can we do that movie for the podcast next week? Let's just
Mini
double up
series.
and let's have Mary Elizabeth Winstead, September or something this year, and just marathon
We can
Scott Pilgrim
invite
in
her on the
September.
show.
Oh my God. Yeah, I would. Yeah, let's not even talk about it. Okay. Well, that's good. And I assume you're off work now that summer's kind of started in full.
I've got the next few weeks off. I'm looking forward to not doing anything and dreading how to go back.
Yeah, sure.
Obviously.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Did you do anything fun for the fourth?
No, not really. Pretty much I cooked a steak for my mom and I and got some ice cream and we watched the first four episodes of that show.
Oh,
Oh
okay. Well,
yeah, dude.
that sounds good. You and mom binging a show together. That sounds fun. And are you gonna go to that bomb breakfast place that's in River Falls while you're there?
The South Fork no longer exists. It
That
was
is a sad story.
It did not survive COVID.
That
Dang.
is that's horrible. Okay,
God
well,
damn.
on to greener pastures. Gideon, how's Muscatine treating you? Did you do the fireworks? Did you do
No.
anything cool? Okay.
I did not. My enthusiasm for the 4th of July is like rock bottom. I just don't care. I was like, I'd rather stay inside. I had planned to, like, I was gonna watch some patriotic movies, but I was super tired from staying up till 4 in the morning playing Elden Ring the night before, so I just kind of lethargic all day.
Whoa, the Elden Ring bug has bitten you then. So how's
Yeah,
it going?
I'm like level 72.
Okay.
I just beat this like spectral knight and ghost horse combo in like the northwest corner of the map where there's like a bunch of chairs and a circle. I forget what it's
And
called.
there was a bunch of like hand creatures attacking you on the way up to that boss. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. You're at Ranny's Rise probably is where you're at.
Right around there.
Yeah, I know the boss you're talking about. Okay, that sounds pretty cool. And what's your build? You got like a great sword or
Oh yeah, I'm rocking. I think it's like the Bloodhound Fang or whatever it's
that
called.
sword rocks.
Yeah, it's awesome. That's been my main thing. I'm very close to using, I think, the Ruins Great Sword is what it's called, that you get from Redmayne Castle,
Right. Okay.
from the knight and the, I don't know, scary monster friend, whatever it is. But I'm almost level 50 strength. I'm like 43 or something. And
Okay.
if I wear this like fancy hat, I get my intelligence to 15, and I need 16 and 50 strength
Okay,
for that.
cool.
So I'm super close. And yeah, I'm doing good. I'm basically bouncing between that Ranny's Rise area and exploring more and more of Caelid and like killing dragons and shit. I think
Sounds good. Well, you're making a fair bit of progress into it then.
I'm close to Rodan. I just haven't found him, basically.
Isn't Caelid, yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah, that sounds good. You're kind of going along the same path that I went through initially. Like I got really sucked into the Ranny quest line. I did like everything for her. And I won't spoil it, but I will say like the rewards for doing Ranny's quest line are very, very worth it. And some of the coolest shit in the game is down that path of the story. So definitely worth engaging more with Ranny. Especially if you've played previous From Software games, it really pays off in a big way.
The
Okay,
other quick
well,
thing, I
absolutely.
beat the first act of Pentiment. I'm pretty sure I got
Oh,
through the
sweet.
time skip.
To the time skip. Okay, awesome. Well, I think we've got a lot of people ready for to do that podcast, and that'd be I need a refresher because there's a lot of names to remember in that
Oh
game,
yeah,
and
I need like the wiki for that.
yeah, exactly. But I'm excited to see what everybody did and who everybody accused and things like this. So,
Yeah.
okay, awesome. Well, we will yeah, we'll have to get that organized then. We'll have a very special episode of Sigma Cinema, Sigma Gaming.
Yeah, Sigma Gaming.
Okay. Anyway, we are here to talk about the Robert Rodriguez movie From Dusk Till Dawn, which who was brought to the podcast by none other than Neil. So, Neil, would you like to tell us why you wanted to bring this totally kick-ass awesome movie?
A little bit of history with it. My friend Ethan back in high school was my film buff friend. He showed this to me sometime, I think, our senior year, maybe the summer after we graduated. And I just remember it being a very surreal experience because it's almost two movies spliced together. But we'll get into it. But like, the hour is about an hour and 40 minutes, or the movie's about an hour and 40 minutes. And at about the hour mark, the movie just takes a sharp left turn as far as like themes, characters, plots, just everything just goes in a completely different direction than the rest of the movie suggested. Maybe they're like hints or Easter eggs of what's coming, but I don't think that they're there. I think that it's just like one of the most bizarre left turns, and yet how it works. One thing that I remember him being really excited about, and I didn't understand because I'm not a horror movie guy, but the movie stars George Clooney and arguably Quentin Tarantino in sort of like this lead role with strong support from Harvey Keitel. But about midway through the movie, we're introduced to this like group of bikers and truckers at a bar, one of whom is played by Tom Savini, who is famous for his stunt and special effects work, particularly on the Friday the 13th movies, the two allegedly good ones, the first and fourth. And I think he does a kick-ass job, sort of like putting into practice what he was more of a more director of, because I think the effects in this are like kind of cheese ball in some ways, but they're still like really, really good. I don't know. I think this movie is very interesting on a lot of levels. Particularly with, I want to let you guys talk, but I'm kind of gushing here.
No,
But
I'm loving this, yeah.
one thing I want to compare is we talked about God, and I'm forgetting his name. Miller, Mad Max movies.
George Miller.
George Miller, and how he has this like very strange body of work where he's got the movies, and then he's got Babe and Happy Feet, and they all rock, even though they're just totally different movies. And Robert Rodriguez strikes me as like being in a very similar vein, where he's got like this, he's got Machete, he's got Grindhouse, and then he's also got Spy Kids. And I might make us watch the original Spy Kids because something tells me that that movie would hold up if we watched it again.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm so down for Spy Kids.
I might vouch for the second. I won't talk about the third or the fourth. I don't even think I saw the fourth. And Sharkboy and Lava Girl sounded like hot trash to me. But I think that first Spy Kids movie will hold up. I'll put money on that.
Damn.
Okay, awesome.
Hell yeah.
Gideon, have you ever heard of this movie before Neil brought it to the show?
So I had heard about it in passing. That somebody had really liked it. I had seen like the meme of like Tarantino and the feet scene, and heard about that. Didn't really know it was like that scene was attached to this scene, movie. And I didn't really know the plot or anything, but I guess I did know that there was going to be like vampires at some point. I just didn't know to what degree, basically. Yeah, so it was pretty fresh to me on the whole. I hadn't seen it till today.
Okay,
Or
cool.
appreciate
That is closer to my experience with it. I knew obviously about the Selma Hayek scene, and I knew about that it eventually becomes a vampire movie. What I did not know was how closely those two things are like linked in the movie. Like it's basically like right after the Selma Hayek scene that everybody knows. they all turn into vampires pretty quickly. And you're right, it tonally and everything, it makes a complete 180. And it's interesting that both of them work as well as they do. Although, and we'll get into this, I think the first half of the movie is significantly stronger than the second half. And I think the second half goes on a little bit too long for like I don't think that it's like butter spread over too much bread. There's not enough plot or character development to cover the second half of the movie, and I think it as a result it drags a little tiny bit, which is it's that's very hard to say for a movie that's like barely over 90 minutes long. I think this movie is like 108 minutes if I read the IMDb correctly. So yeah, the kind of the basic plot is that George Clooney and Quentin Tarantino are
Brothers.
brothers and outlaws on the run after a spree of bank robberies, and one of them went wrong, and they've killed a shitload of people, and the Texas Rangers are after him. Opens with a really great Tarantino-esque action scene, and they're just on the run. They take a hostage, they kill the hostage, they find some new hostages who are kind of our protagonist, right? So it's Harvey Keitel, who is awesome in everything. Juliette Lewis, the brother, and then Harvey Keitel's the dad. So they kind of take them, and it's all about trying to get to the Mexico border. And the bar just across the border is called the Titty Twister. That is where the second half of this movie really like upon approaching the Titty Twister, the entire tone of the movie changes from like stylized but somewhat serious and believable to being like completely insane. But that's okay. So the big twist of this movie is that they're trying to get across to Mexico. Everything's going fine. They settle down in this bar, and then everybody at dusk, everybody transforms into vampires, and it becomes a basically like a Sam Raimi movie in terms of the violence and gore, and it's all about them trying to shoot their way out of this hellhole full of vampires. So I guess we want to give high level thoughts just kind of on the movie. I already said that I thought the first half is significantly better than the second half, although I really enjoyed the whole thing overall. I just think the first half is a little stronger. Gideon, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this movie, I had a lot of fun with it. I think that it gave me so many moments where I'm just like, holy shit, Jesus Christ, like what's happening? And it is a strange movie in how it does feel like it's, yeah, two movies spliced together, two totally different movies. And I think on the whole, it does do a pretty good job with it. I do feel like it's still a bit clunky in execution, but I think the ending kind of almost like helps remind you, like, guys, it's just a movie, like it's just whatever, it's fun, maybe don't take it so serious. But yeah, I don't know. I had a lot of fun with it, but it was just such a crazy movie with so much crazy random shit packed into it. It's so gritty and grimy and just like bizarre.
Okay, and how about you, Neil?
I feel like that first the first half of the movie where it's George Clooney and Quentin Tarantino taking the family hostage, and like it's a human crime drama, is it stands on its own very well. Like I would watch the conventional ending of that movie.
100%.
There's a lot of cool elements. Like Quentin Tarantino's character is like a schizophrenic or something. Like he imagines that people are saying things they're not saying in real life, and that leads to all kinds of horrible nonsense. But yeah, like in an alternate reality, this movie ends in like a conventional way, and I want to see that movie. But the ending where it turns into a vampire slaying movie, it's to as far as I can tell, it's just totally unexpected. I don't think there's any indication that it's going to happen. And it's a very abrupt tonal shift. And honestly, like it almost feels like it was a bunch of people in the film industry getting together and like blowing the studio's money. Like Robert Rodriguez was like, "Hey, Quentin Tarantino, do you want to star in this movie, and I'll let you ogle Juliet Lewis's feet, and then Salma Hayek is gonna stick her foot in your mouth and pour whiskey down it, and you get to drink it, and you get paid to do that. And it was like, there's nothing in that sentence that I don't love.
Yeah.
And then yeah, like the action is sort of like 1930s monster movie, like. As they're killing one vampire, there's like seven others around them. They're all just sort of like waving their arms, like
yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not like it's a. There are elements that are well choreographed, but overall, it's a lot of like dumb zombie horde stuff. But it works because it's not taking itself seriously at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, you see that they're having fun doing it, and mm-hmm. you're having fun watching them do it.
Yeah.
I think that's a good point. I think with a less skillful director, they wouldn't have properly set you up for your expectations to be like, okay, this is now a silly movie. But they do a great job of like, once you get to the titty twister, it's like there's a guy whose codpiece in his pants has a gun on the inside. Like, this is now the most insane movie ever. And Cheech Marin is here, and Danny Trejo is the bartender, and who I originally thought was Danny Glover, but is not in fact Danny Glover, and is a actor from like a lot of blaxploitation movies is here.
Yeah, Fred.
What Williams. Was his name? Fred Williams. Fred. Yeah. And they do a good job of like keying you into like, okay, this is about to pop off and be totally nuts. So when it does pop off and people are using holy water inside super soakers, and like Harvey Keitel is holding a cross up like this, yeah. And then he's like pumping the shotgun with the, and then like just a lot of like creative weaponry and mm-hmm. fun kind of stuff like that. Well, you know, just like a lot of fun stuff in this movie. Do you think that I know that Tarantino doesn't have a directing credit on this movie, but it really does seem like the first half of the movie could be any other Quentin Tarantino movie, and the second half of this movie could just be literally any other Robert Rodriguez movie.
He doesn't have a directing credit, but he does have a writer's credit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, the dialogue definitely has a bit of a Tarantinian bent to it. I mean, people say, come on, Ramblers, let's get rambling, which is from Reservoir Dogs. There's Big mm-hmm. Kahuna Burgers is the burger yeah. chain that George Clooney goes to like early in the movie. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's all sorts of like throwbacks and references and things like that. Yeah, I mean, like, I think the twist is, like, the thing to talk about with this movie. I don't think there's, like, a whole lot else to, like, really dig into. And, like, the plot is pretty bare bones. It's just to set you up for, like, having a really fun time and having a fun, gritty, gory...
Tarantino-esque, like, slasher, almost.
Mm-hmm. I guess the thing I was most surprised by was, like, how many people died in the movie. I thought, like, basically it's everybody except George Clooney and Juliette Lewis is dead by the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised that, like, Harvey Keitel bit the dust. I thought that for sure he was going to make it till the end. I was kind of surprised that he didn't. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I felt similarly. I was shocked that, so, like, they kill, what, all the vampires in there? And yeah. And make it out. Just the two of them. Yeah, I thought that was crazy. And even how Sex Machine was like hiding being bit for like quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just I don't even know like how everybody just how the son died. Like, holy shit, man. Mm-hmm. You know, that yeah. was really crazy.
Kill me. Yeah, that was great. Oh, there's a lot of good stuff. This would have been the perfect, you know, this would have been a perfect film in 40s movie.
Yeah.
I think, as opposed to maybe like Deliverance, right? Like, but we can talk about that at a later date.
Jesus.
That was an accident, Gideon. I don't know if you know that story, but like,
mm-mm.
like we all got into Deliverance thinking it was like, because the cover of the movie is like Burt Reynolds with a crossbow. We were like, yeah, we're going to deliver some people as Burt Reynolds, you know, we're gonna shoot some people with a crossbow. It's gonna be like an action movie. And then like 20 minutes in the movie, we're watching Ned Beatty get anally raped by two hillbillies. It was like, I'm sitting there with like a 40-ounce malt liquor in one hand, the Jimmy John's sub in my other hand, like, holy shit. And, like, Neil and Paul are on either side of me. We're all just three dudes watching a male-on-male sexual assault. we're all just sitting there like, oh, my God. Like,
I refuse to apologize for art.
It was a great movie. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Actually, it kind of reminds me, any of you guys heard or seen the movie Midnight Cowboy?
No, never heard of it.
Okay, so the only reason I bring it up in relation to Deliverance is Deliverance stars John Voight. You might know him as the dad in National Treasure. He's Nick Cage's dad in National Treasure. He's Angelina Jolie's dad. He is in Midnight Cowboy with Dustin Hoffman. He plays a male prostitute in New York, who like moves to New York City to like try to make it, and basically just has like the worst time ever. Anyway, well, I was thinking about doing that for the podcast at some point because I love Dustin Hoffman so much. But yeah. Anyway, what else do we want to talk about with From Dusk Till Dawn? Like I struggled. I feel like I'm. It's not that I didn't like it. I just feel like I'm struggling to come up with things to talk about. The favorite weapons in this movie, I would say definitely for me, like this super soaker full of holy water was a totally obvious
that was choice. Sweet. And while he was like blessing the holy water, like right before they're about to run out, mm-hmm. that was sweet. We could talk about maybe some of our favorite practical effects or different action scenes. Some things I wanted to mention. I loved when they used the table to impale four different vampires.
Yeah.
That was, I thought, one of the most creative kills and just like so funny to see. Yeah. And that fucking like rat vampire or whatever the fuck that was.
Yeah. That came out of Beanie.
Yeah, yeah. When I saw that at the end, I was like, this thing looks so familiar. Like, I don't know if I'd seen it online or something before. Or I was like, or maybe it's just from my nightmares, because this thing is horrifying. Like,
yeah, who does it come out of again?
Sex Machine, who's played by Tom Savini.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah. I remember. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it kind of reminded me of the rodents of unusual size from Princess Bride. Mm. A little bit. Gideon, have you seen Princess Bride?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. Yeah. Well, no, you're not missing much anyway. Okay.
I don't know if that's fair.
I was just trying to upset Neil. I like that movie enough.
Yeah. It's a fine movie. It's not as good as a lot of people make it out to be, I think.
That's kind of how I feel about it, where it's like, this is charming and good, and I like Robert Wright and Casey L. How do I say that guy's last name?
Elwes.
Yeah. I like that actor quite a bit, but I don't know if this movie is all that Reddit makes it out to be. To be perfectly honest. Okay. Anyway. You know, somebody that is a triple A list movie star, and I have never quite gotten the hype on, George Clooney. I think he's like good in this movie, and he does like a totally serviceable job and at like getting us from place to place. Is there another George Clooney movie that you guys like can really point to and be like, oh yeah, that's a great performance, or I really like that movie? Because I can't really think of any George Clooney movie that I've seen and I was like, oh yeah, that was the shit.
Yeah, I feel like I don't really know how much I've seen him in, actually, because all I can remember is that Batman movie that he was in.
God,
yeah. I watched that like endlessly growing up, so that's like the only thing I remember him from.
That's the one with Mr. Freeze, right?
Oh yeah, dude.
Yeah, okay.
Hell yeah.
Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. Mm-hmm. You know, Kill the Dinosaurs.
The Ice Age. We should do that one sometime.
Dude, yeah, for sure. My next door neighbor growing up had that, like, in his bedroom, he had a poster of that movie on the wall. Like, that was his fucking favorite movie. It was
fucking awesome.
The George Clooney Batman and Robin, which, okay, you know. But, like, every movie when you're eight is, like, the coolest movie ever. So, you know, like, I thought the Pokemon movie was totally the coolest thing ever when I was eight. Yeah, so George Clooney, not super wild about him. But we should watch his movie sometime. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? It's a Coen Brothers movie, and he's in that. I'm sure he's excellent in that. But I think that that's probably speaks more to their skill as a director, producer, team than it might to George Clooney. I just can't really like, for as A-list of an actor as he is, and you hear about him all the time, I can't point to a movie where I go, oh, yeah, that. You know, like with Daniel Day-Lewis, I'm like, There Will Be Blood, you know, the greatest performance of all time. With George Clooney, I'm like, I don't know, he's on ER for a long time. He shows up in People magazine a lot, you know, like, I don't really know. It's kind of like famous for being famous, I guess. Okay, who else is in this movie? Is Tarantino's performance in this movie not bad?
Very unhinged.
Unhinged. He already kind of looks like a child molester, so or like a sex pest.
So that he, like, scene, it worked out, you know,
worked out perfectly. Neil, what did you think? I thought Tarantino's like acting, like, you know, wasn't like incredible, but I thought he was like actually fairly decent in this movie, which is weird because everything else he shows up in, he's horrible. Like when he puts himself in his own movies, he always is terrible.
Ruins it.
He does. His scene in Django Unchained is like unwatchable. But anyway, what do you think, Neil?
No, I think that like he and Clooney like sort of draw out each other, like whatever the other has for charisma, they draw it out of each other in those scenes where, like, you know, George is like coming to terms with Quentin Tarantino's like insanity. And just like, but like, I need to get he's my brother. I need to get him through this with me. I think it works. And I think having a strong director rather than being self-directed probably helped a lot. And like, I think I feel like he wrote the part for himself, but he was cast well in the role. Like, there was some level of discussion, like, this is the kind of role that you, Quentin Tarantino, can pull off in an acting role, rather than like you can't be the protagonist. I'm sorry, you can't be
right. Yeah, it's just not gonna happen. Yeah, yeah. That kind of reminds me of when I was. Do you guys know what Medieval Times is? The dinner theater thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was like, not that I was gonna do it, but I was like looking up like what are the requirements to be a knight at Medieval Times, right? Because that would be like, if there was a cool job, right? You want to be a knight at Medieval Times? That would be this shit, right?
That would be crazy.
I was like, I was telling some people about it. I was like, oh yeah, all you gotta do is be able to run in sand and be like relatively physically fit, and they can show you how to be a knight in Medieval Times. Oh. And somebody was like, Sam, I think you'd be probably more suited for like if they have some sort of like court jester kind of hard kind of role. I was like, you know what, you're probably right about that. So,
but maybe you could cover someone's shift or something, you know, fill in.
Yeah, who's that? They would know. They'd be like, I'd ride out like all off balance and shit. They'd be like, that guy is not one of the full time knights. He's filling in on nights and like, weekends.
You're like friends with the sound guy, and he plays like a Rush song for you on your way out.
Dude, that would be so sick. Okay, anyway, but yeah, Tarantino definitely knew his limitations a little bit. It seems like he knew his limitations a little bit better back in the 90s before he'd blown up so big. Favorite scenes from this movie?
I mean, I love the whole set dressing and everything of the titty twister, obviously, like it earns its name.
Yeah.
And I think it is pretty crazy when everything goes down. I think my favorite is just the sun exploding after telling his sister to kill him.
Yeah, that was that was pretty over the top, pretty cool. I gotta say, yeah, the scene when they first get into the titty twister and you realize what kind of place it is, definitely the opening is great too. I love the scene when they're crossing the border and they're being inspected by the border patrol. To me, that was the most like tense, like stakes are high, like everything kind of came together in that scene in a way that it kind of didn't for the rest of the movie. Although I don't mean to keep saying that I didn't like it, because I totally did. How about you, Neil?
Yeah, no, I was going to reference Quentin Tarantino and George Clooney like in the camper van shower, and like Quentin Tarantino is gonna like blow the whole thing because George Clooney made like an offhand remark about him being crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And he just like can't keep his mouth shut, and so
right
smashes his face in and knocks him out.
Yeah.
That was great. But I think, honestly, I think one of the best sequences is the opening between the guy running the convenience store and this Texas Ranger, and they're just, like, shooting the shit for, like, 10 minutes. And you think, and, like, everything seems totally normal, and the cop goes around the corner and sees the bathroom, and all of a sudden George Clooney is up in the cashier's face with the gun, like, what the fuck, you let the guy use the bathroom? Like you thought everything was normal up until that point. It's another, that I guess that's kind of maybe the only foreshadowing to the vampire twist at the end, where things seem normal and all of a sudden we're going to take a hard right turn.
Mm-hmm. You know, another, now that I'm thinking about it, another very strong scene that I think shows off the directing chops of Rodriguez is when Clooney returns after getting the burgers, and then he finds that Richie has, like, raped and murdered their original hostage. And there's this, like, this impending sense of dread where, like, Clooney starts to figure out what had happened, and they keep flashing, like, I don't want to say, like, subliminal, because, you know, you're supposed to notice them, but they keep flashing images of, like, the dead body on screen just enough that you're, like, supremely creeped out and scared of, like, yeah, what Richie is, like, really capable of. And they did a lot with that scene in, like, establishing things about a character in a very visual and, like, visceral way, instead of just, like, telling you that he's a sex pest. They, like, really kind of brought that creepiness out. I thought, like, as creepy as that scene is, I thought that was incredibly well done. I'm going to sound like a huge pervert. I think the scene with Salma Hayek is, like, totally awesome. And, like, is it awesome because of the TNA factor? Like, absolutely. That's, like, a big part of it. But, like, that's the price of admission on the movie. You know, she got paid a lot for doing the movie because she's hot. You know, she has, like, what, 10 lines? It's like, who gives a shit, right? And it wasn't going to be just anybody up on that stage. They wanted to find, like, the most badass, hottest Mexican actress ever, and they got her. So, yeah, that's, like, part of the price of admission when you sign up to see From Dusk Till Dawn. I mean, her name's on the I think her name's on the poster.
I'm not sure, it might be.
No, it isn't, damn it. Okay, whatever. maybe my point is totally moot, but I think that scene is totally awesome. They, like, the music in the scene is, like, really good. It's really well paced. She comes out, she's got the snake.
All the sexiness of it, like, fits for committing to, like, this gory, gritty, violent, just, like, movie, and that, you know, that's what fans, I would think, would want from this type of thing. Like, it's committing to the X type rating feel.
To me, it's like sexiness in the same way that, like, Bayonetta embraces sexiness. It's like, just, it's not meant to be a larger statement about anything. It's just part of the fun, and it's okay with being like, no, this is fun. This is part of the fun of coming to see a movie like this, is getting to look at beautiful people, right? It's like, why is George Clooney in the movie, right? It's because, like, people that go to the movies want to see, like, attractive people. I'm not saying that has to be all the time, right? You know, it's it's great that we have unconventionally attractive actors in things, but, you know, that doesn't mean that the opposite of that isn't valid as well. And I think this is a great example of, like, almost a more old school and a more pure way of making a movie, where it was like, listen, this has violence and explosions and vampires and tits and, like, a bunch of shit that you want to see because you want to see it. Like, you know, you give me money, I give you the shit you want to see. It's very, like, transactional in that way. And I can appreciate that kind of honesty about, like, the product that's being sold here. Like, Robert Rodriguez is not going to pull a Ken Levine Bioshock Infinite and, like, yell at you for thinking that Salma Hayek is hot in this movie. You know, you're not going to be like, oh yeah, she's hot. And he's not going to be like, oh, well, actually, she's this well-developed character. Well-developed. She's this really interesting character, you know, with all these different, and how dare you comment. You know, he's not going to pull that stuff. He's like, no, this is the movie I made. And, you know, she got paid very well, I'm sure. Neil, any comment on that?
No, I agree. I think direct is probably the way to phrase well, this, I don't think there's, like, much room for subtlety or you know, like, hidden messages. It's just, here's what's happening. We're gonna lay it out. There's a few points where you've got some, like, a chance to interpret things the way that you might want to interpret them, or but yeah, it's just laying things out. Like it's almost like mathematical. Like we're not trying to hide anything. We're not trying to say anything beyond just let's make a kick-ass action movie.
Did anybody catch when they were like trying to figure out a strategy to defeat the vampires, and they're like, can you just make a cross out of anything? And one of the guys behind the bar was like, yeah, Peter Cushing does it all the time. Did either of you guys catch that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what was that about? I did not
catch that. So Peter Cushing played Van Helsing in like a million old Hammer vampire movies. But it was funny that they called out Peter Cushing by name. He's getting, you would know him as Grand Moff Tarkin from Star Wars.
Oh, okay, nice.
Yeah, he was awesome. Yeah, he was I think Dr. Frankenstein in a couple of those old movies as well.
He did a lot of stuff opposite
David Prowse.
That and Count Dooku.
Oh, Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee, yeah, like
yeah.
They all go way back.
Yeah. Oh god, let's just be bold about this. More Christopher Lee movies on the podcast too. And if we have to watch Attack of the Clones, I totally will, because he's awesome.
He's fucking awesome.
Count Dooku is the sickest thing in that entire movie. I will stand by that. The fucking curved hilt, dude, just pop. Like you're good. I know that like it seems like lightsabers would be very light because it's like, you know, literally beam. It doesn't seem like it'd be heavy, so I don't know.
Name, if,
like,
dude.
I don't know if principles of leverage would really apply, but it just feels like you'd get like a lot of downward, just boom, just fucking crack somebody's skull with that fucking curved hilt. I don't know why I think that, but
that's awesome.
So what are we thinking? Is there anything, any other topics we want to talk about with From Dusk Till Dawn? Because I'm pretty much like ready to give us some stars and wrap things up.
Before we give ratings, I just want to give a major shout out to the special effects in the vampire sequence. I think like some of them are bad, like Frost's vampire mask is not the greatest thing I've ever seen. But I think in general, I think Tom Savini just did a ton of great work here, just getting a lot of those transformations and creepy creatures across. I think the movie's worth watching just to see that.
Yeah.
They could have settled for a bunch of dollar store plastic vampire teeth, and they didn't.
No, you're right. There are a lot of great special effects in the second half of the movie. It's very Sam Raimi, and it's just like buckets of blood and buckets of gore, and everybody is squishy and easy to kill, and it just, there's not a lot of resistance. As soon as I finished this movie, I turned on Dead Space just because I wanted to blow up some freakos and like see a bunch of gore and do and, you know, chop off a bunch of limbs and shit. So I completely understand the visceral fun nature of the second half of this movie. Yeah, and I love that steak gun that they've got on some sort of like propeller, that so they can just keep stabbing people with the wooden sticks.
Oh, yeah.
I think that
felt awesome. Like a Fallout weapon or something. You would
maybe... Yeah. Yeah, a little bit.
That was awesome.
Gideon, anything you want to add before we kind of wrap up?
Two other small things. So I really also liked when one of the vampires' like eyes fucking exploded like onto Juliet Lewis. That was really gross. That was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And for how hard of a like left turn the movie makes, I think when it kind of plays up the like dark comedy at the end, like, oh, why'd you say to meet us here? Like, what the hell? This was a shit show. And I love how they pull the camera out and it's this like ancient like Mayan Aztec temple or something.
Yeah, like nobody knew.
Yeah, and it's just like all there. It just goes and goes like for so long. So I thought that was really funny. I like that. I think I'm good.
All right, Neil, what do you think for stars, man?
I probably have a little bit of nostalgia here. I'm gonna give it like a weak four. I think if I was being really objective, I'd probably give it a three, but I just have such fond memories of this movie that I have to bump it up to a four. It's just a lot of fun. And again, like that the first hour of the movie is like a raw human crime drama, and then the last 40 minutes, maybe there's a few cut, maybe you could cut a little bit so there's less rah-rah monster stuff going on. But generally, it just seemed like a bunch of like film industry vets just like, hey, we've got an extra $10 million from the studio. Let's just go all out and just do something weird and just have fun doing it. And like, you can tell they're having fun. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching them have fun.
So.
Well said.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to say it. Like, yeah, there are faults where there are parts of me that kind of like want to give this movie a 3. But I can't. I had too much fun watching it, and I had, even though the second half was schlocky, it was so intentionally schlocky. It was like, mm-hmm. I'm having a great time and watching Harvey Keitel like do his weird bad Southern accent and kill vampires. Like, I'm still having a great time. I'm eating popcorn. I'm eating peanut M&Ms. Like, you know, is it high art? No, but that's totally okay. You know, I feel totally comfortable giving. I'd say a low four is appropriate for this. Mm-hmm. How about you, Kenny?
For me, I am gonna give it like the strongest 3 possible. Mm-hmm. If we were doing points, it'd be or like half stars, it'd be 3.5. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it, you know, sometimes it gets a little clunky or might drag a little bit. But I mean, dude, it's, yeah, written by Tarantino, directed by the guy who did Spy Kids. And you got George Clooney as the lead guy, and there's a bunch of vampires, and there's a bunch of sexy stuff in it, and there's a bunch of violent stuff, and just like very R-rated. So there's plenty of fun to be had with this. There's so much worse stuff you could watch. Like Neil said, like, everybody's really having a lot of fun with it, and you can tell. I think it was a good one to watch too for me personally, because just a couple days before we rewatched Django. And that was the first time I'd seen that since like 2013, I think. Mm-hmm. So I was definitely kind of in that Tarantino vibe.
So I was in the theater for the midnight showing of Django in Iowa City the night it came out.
That's fucking awesome.
And me, Tom, and Hassan and Marcus all went up to see it, and it was like one of the best theater going experiences of my life. Except for, it was the four of us, and then behind us was a row full of black people. And as every time Django would start getting the shit whipped out of him, or somebody was getting the shit whipped out of him, I was like, "Oh my god, stop hitting him!"
Oh my god,
I felt so bad, I felt so guilty. But in the end, it was all okay. That movie has a really happy, kind of positive ending. It's just a joy to watch.
Love that movie.
And so that was good. Gideon, I think that means it's your turn to pick for next week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a couple ideas. Okay. Now, I want to respect everybody's time, but I've been thinking about a 3-hour movie.
Okay.
And I'm thinking I want to do Beau is Afraid, because I know we're going to get to Ari Aster at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody besides Alyssa that's seen this movie.
I have not seen this movie.
And I know we'll probably like talk about Hereditary and Midsommar or something at some point. So I think it's an interesting starting point, but it is a lot. And it's kind of like a horror comedy, I guess you could say.
Okay, I'm into it.
I think it would make for a good discussion. And I've been thinking about it a lot lately. So I've only seen it one time.
And did you have any other...
Oh, go ahead, Neil.
Sorry, Neil, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I made you guys watch Seven Samurai, so I've got a. Everybody gets one 3-hour movie at least.
Right, not every week, but yeah.
Now I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, Neil, have you seen Beau is Afraid?
Nope, I know nothing about it except it's Joaquin Phoenix.
That's about where I'm at with it, and I know that, like Gideon said, it's a lot. There's just a lot of buzz on the internet, and you said you had other ideas, or you just meant Beau is Afraid.
The other one I was kind of thinking about, which I haven't seen, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it was a Criterion movie that kind of interested me called Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai.
I've not seen this or heard of it.
It's like a 90s crime thriller. I guess he's like an assassin that follows the way of the samurai. It's got music by RZA from Wu-Tang. It sounds pretty cool, like a hip-hop samurai genre blend. So yeah. I don't know. I'm curious about it. It's by Jim Jarmusch, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm not super familiar with him.
Did you guys know RoboCop is in the Criterion Collection?
I did not.
That's how you know the Criterion Collection is fucking legit, dudes. That they say that, hey, RoboCop deserves to be in here, and it does. That movie's
yeah, rips.
It's so funny. It's like one of the funniest movies ever. Anyway, okay. Well, next, I guess for next week we'll do Beau's Afraid. If anybody needs an extension because they run out of time to watch the movie, then, you know, go ahead and you know, we'll see. We'll see how things shake out. What's everybody doing with the rest of their evening?
I'm not sure yet.
Gideon's gonna go hop back into Elden Ring.
Yeah, either that or I was thinking I might. There's a drive-in nearby. We might do a double feature either tonight, maybe tomorrow. But it would be A Quiet Place Day One and Maxine.
Okay, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
How about you, Neil? Oh, you're in Wisconsin, so probably hanging out with your mom.
Yeah, we'll probably keep working our way to Gentlemen in Moscow.
All right, cool.
There you go.
You know, you get bored, you know, try like just watch like Eraserhead or something with her and, you know, just spice things up a little bit. All right, well, guys, if I don't hear from you before next week, have a good week. As the weather's supposed to be good this week, have a stellar weekend. I'll be moving into a house that's, irresponsibly speaking, right next to a Chick-fil-A. So next time you guys see me, I might be 300 pounds. We'll see how things shake out.
Yeah.
All right. I'll see you guys next week.
Later. Bye. Have a good one.